Please be seated. Right, good morning. Just for the benefit of the record, I'll take a note as to who is in the room. So Mr. Moore and Ms. Nahop for the Regional Council, good morning to you. Ms. Williams for the Director General of Conservation, Ms. Dixon for the Minister of the Environment, Ms. Irving for Territorial Authorities in particular, yes, and Mr. Page for ORAD. Yes. Mr. Welsh, you were here for Trustpower. Any other party that wants to enter an appearance? Okay, thank you. So quite a bit happening over the weekend, and we'd like to talk to you about that. Yeah.
Yes.
Have you got any issues you want to raise so I can make a note of those?
Yes, I thought I would, for the record, take the court through the just the documents that have been filed, not through the documents themselves, but just highlighting what has been filed. And then secondly, I intend to seek leave to file a further piece of supplementary evidence from Mr. Wilson in relation to an answer to a question he gave when he was giving his evidence, which turns out to be incorrect, and it's material, so I'll flag
and it's
that.
Material, so that's Mr.
Yes.
Wilson. Okay.
Yes.
Alrighty, Mr. Wilson was one of those folk that I wanted to talk to you about this morning. Hawk. Anything else you want to raise with the court this morning?
No, those were the two issues.
Okay. Anybody else got any? Do you want to signal just issues that you need to raise before we commence the hearing? Right. Well, the court wants to talk, obviously, about the evidence that has been filed and wants to talk about the expert conferencing. So we'll start with the expert conferencing first. It is my view and the view of Mr. Dunlop that you will need a full day for the hydro conference and a full day for territorial authorities conference. At the moment, they've been scheduled for Thursday, Friday. I understand that the only impediment for a full day for hydro is that Mr. Wilson is not available. I don't think that the advice as to his unavailability given in the memorandum of the 10th of March that he was unavailable is sufficient, although we now have an explanation from, I think, probably you, Ms. Melhoft, as to why he is unavailable. So the court has two choices, either direct that he be there and somebody and ORC does whatever it needs to do in relation to its meeting, or we reschedule the conference. So which way would you like us to go?
The meeting that is causing the issue for Mr. Wilson is one that has been long scheduled with multiple participants. And he has signalled, and we have signalled to the court since this date was floated, his unavailability.
And by signalling, did you mean just including a two-word indication that he was unavailable, without any supporting explanation?
In terms of the way that the draft memorandum was put together, parties were invited to record the dates on which they were unavailable, and all witnesses recorded dates. Some witnesses recorded significant windows where they were unavailable. No party had recorded, or no witness had recorded any reasons at that point in time. So the first iteration of the document simply recorded unavailability of witnesses.
So when did you record that he was unavailable because he has another meeting to go to?
It would have been on the... Tuesday of last week to other parties and Wednesday of last week to the court.
And you gave the explanation for his reason for his unavailability on the, in that memorandum?
No, you didn't.
Look, we are pouring an enormous amount of court resources into this hearing, and the view of the court was that we should be doing expert conferencing in the weeks that we were not sitting. We have tried to accommodate everybody by interposing the expert conferencing during the hearing, and that's with consequential impact on the schedule for the hearing. So how would you like us to proceed? If I don't know whether somebody else can sit in on that meeting instead of him, but the court can't organise itself together with many other parties around the availability of one witness. I don't care when the thing proceeds. I've already indicated it should not be proceeding during the course of this hearing, but trying to accommodate parties, we've tried to do that with the inevitable impact on the court schedule. So what do you want us to do? We're not going to give you a half-day conference if it doesn't result in a result. That would be a waste of time and resources. Mm. It's a full day. That's what you've been given.
Mm. I'll simply need to come back after the morning break in relation to that meeting. I've asked a number of times as to whether that meeting can be shifted, and the answer I've consistently had back is no, that's not a meeting that can really be shifted. It was shifted to accommodate the window for conferencing, which was to follow this first tranche of hearing, and there are a significant number of participants involved in that. Mm. And again, Mr. Wilson's attendance at this conferencing is critical given his involvement in the schedule. At best I can do is to ask a final time in terms of whether that can be accommodated, and if not, we'll simply have to find another date for the conferencing that was otherwise to start on the Thursday.
You will, and you'll have to do so ASAP. I don't even know, as matters stand, whether the court has been able to find a location for this conferencing, given the amount of dealing as between parties, but not looping the court in terms of its own resources and capacity to be able to secure venues. Mm. At least we have a commissioner. That is one thing that we've managed to secure for you. But there's a lot of knock-on effects across this hearing and for all of the participants as well. So you'd come back by 10:30 at the latest as to whether or not the council can move its hearing, or does this conference need to move, and if so, where is it moving to? So far, the only participants in the Hydro conference are ORC and Trustpower. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. Well, if it has to move, it has to move, Mr. Walsh, and I really don't see I don't see why we are going at breakneck speed anyway over conferencing for Trustpower. Doesn't have to be concluded this week.
No, Mum, I haven't been pushing for that date. Right. I just understood from the messaging from Mr. Cooper that the preference was for it to be on the 18th and the 19th, and at one stage Trustpower was being vacated on, because we're scheduled to be heard on Friday, which may or may not happen.
Which may or may not happen, yeah. And one of the things that I'll come back to you this morning is, formally in a minute, is whether or not we can reallocate you to another week.
Mum, I'll do whatever the court requires. There was a suggestion even that we would be vacated to Cromwell, which we would do if that assists. So I'm not pushing for that date. It's just that I need to organise my witnesses and tell them and their various commitments. But, Mum, one of the options may be that perhaps at the Hydrology Conference, the Trustpower Conference proceeds on the Thursday, and perhaps the parties agree that the hydrology aspects are discussed, which Mr. Wilson's not a hydrologist.
No, I think you can have all your witnesses in. The differences between the parties on matters to do with hydrology are certainly unclear to the court, which is why the court wanted the conference to take place after the cases for the parties, so that the court could at least tease out where those differences were lying. The court doesn't know. So I don't know how sensible it is to have Mr. Wilson there or not there in hydrology just proceeding. I don't know. That is why the strategy was to have the evidence called so we could start to have a clearer understanding of the differences.
Yes, Mum, that's useful, because the message had been coming back, at least to me, that the opposite was true, that the court
that
was prioritising, that the court wished to prioritise the conferencing over the hearing of the witnesses.
Right.
So
that's
useful, Mum.
Mr. Cooper back in the room. But that is not the court's view. Court's view has been consistently that we will conference during the weeks that we were off. It was the parties that had requested that the court conference prior to the adjournment. I did not initiate that myself. There's a lot of reasons not to do so, but trying to accommodate you, we've looked at it.
Oh, Mum, all I can say for myself is that I haven't pushed for the conference this week.
Right.
And I was trying to accommodate what I right. understood to be the directions with a small d, Mum, of the court and the commissioner, who had a preference that it be prioritised this week. So, Mum, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work in terms of dates, but certainly I wouldn't want the court to have the impression that Trustpower, or I'd say ORC in respect of the hydrology, have been pushing for the 18th or the 19th, Mum.
It's not the case. Okay, good.
Yeah, quite to the contrary. Those were the two dates that each of the council's witnesses were not available.
Mm.
But the message had come back that those were the dates on which the conferencing was to happen.
Okay, so we're now, all of us are clear, and we will make sure that Mr Dunlop and Mr Cooper are clear that the court's preference for all conferencing was after the evidence in chief had been heard so we could see where the cross-examination lay, as in the case of Mr Wilson, understand what the gaps were, therefore have a sensible conference. There was a request last week that at least the primary sector be brought forward, and then a request, hydro and territorial authorities need to leapfrog, and away it goes. But it's not a sensible process. It's extraordinarily hard on the court to manage, because we're only receiving, we're not in amongst the discussions that are happening between council.
The order, just in terms of that issue, was a function of the parties trying to respond to what we had understood the direction from the court was to proceed next week with conferencing. So I think we've been at cross purposes in terms of the dates and the timeframes.
We are content to take the expert conferencing after the evidence has been called, but in saying that,
in a sense, the sooner the better, provided we can get the right people in the room and Mr Dunlop has availability. If we can line those things up, we're doing all we can to do that as soon as possible, because there would be some merit in having some of the joint witness statements from those experts back, because it feeds into the planning response, particularly in relation to the schedule. But again, organising and making the arrangements is proving challenging, but the parties are doing what they can with the availability constraints.
Right. So that we have a clear understanding moving forward, what is proposed in relation to what I'll call the primary sector conference on the schedule, the timing of that. I know.
Next Wednesday, I understand, is looking like a date that appears to work for all parties and Mr Dunlop.
Right. I think it's a two-day conference, not a one-day conference. If you put in an adequate time for your conference, you're going to get a poorly considered result or an inadequate result. It's just a waste of time and resources. So next Wednesday, Thursday, are all technical witnesses available?
That relies on Dr. Davron being available for the 2 days rather than the 1 day.
Yes,
he had constraints over a 2 week period, but was able to make himself available for that 1 day. He may be able to make himself available for 2 days. We'll follow up.
Do you know, should the court sit at the convenience of individual witnesses, or does the court sit with its work program ahead, as inconvenient as it is to witnesses and parties?
The parties need to do what they can to assist the court.
I think it's a two-day conference, and that's with technical witnesses. Now, we have repeatedly suggested that the output of that technical conference needed to be communicated in person to planners. I don't see any arrangements proposed for that. I haven't changed my view, so I'm going to direct it. So that will be
a matter for Mr Dunlop to manage, whether all of the planners are present or just one or two, a representative who can then communicate to the other planners. But there has to be some satisfactory process about communicating back to planners in person. Ideally, the planner should be there observing, but apparently that's inefficient for reasons that haven't been explained. So have you got any comment about that?
The issue in terms of the planning participation is one of whether of ensuring the technical witnesses have the opportunity to finish the technical work before the planning overlay is imposed or the planning view comes to part. In a structured way, ideally the experts do their work and the planners then pick that work up and then say, well, what does this mean for their planning framework? My view is that the planners shouldn't be informing or influencing the way in which the schedule is being prepared in the sense that it's for the technical witnesses to work through the issues identified with that schedule rather than getting into planning issues, fundamental questions, which ultimately the court will have to address.
Well, I don't think the court has actually suggested that the planners pile on in on a technical conference, but we're there in the capacity of observing it. Now, if that's not to happen, there still needs to be clear communication by the technical witnesses as to the outputs of that conference. I have seen far too many times as a judge and practitioner when planners have simply failed to understand the salience or significance of some technical matter which has been conferenced or been communicated by expert witnesses. They've got to be on the same page, whatever that page is, in terms of a joint witness statement. So my suggestion is that if they're not sitting in and observing, and that happens plenty of other conferences, but if that's not appropriate that they observe, that there is an arrangement such that the joint witness statement is communicated to the planners in person.
It strikes me that this may be able to be addressed by having day one of the two-day conference for the experts, day two, the planners observing.
Or that there is an opportunity at least for the second half of, day two to observe what the outputs are. Mr Dunlop's preference is not to allow witnesses to disappear for 3 days before signing a joint witness conference, but rather that the statement be signed at the conclusion of the conference or at any other time as he directs. And again, the reasons for that are obvious. When people leave the room, often their positions and thoughts change.
So
that direction that you sought won't be made. The direction will be that you are to sign either at the end of the conference or at any other time as the facilitator directs. But there has to be opportunity for one or more planners to receive a briefing by technical witnesses as to what was agreed and why, which should be the same as whatever's in that joint witness statement. That needs to be accommodated. They then can take it back to the rest of the planning folk, presumably they will need to take it back to the rest of the planning folk, who will then reflect on those outputs. And in a facilitated conference, that's my suggestion, in the week, in one of the weeks that we're not hearing, come together to review what are the impacts on the schedule, whether there remains one schedule, as there currently is, applying to those three sectors broadly, or whether there's going to be three schedules. I don't know, but some reconciliation process will need to take place. So there needs to be a planners' conference specifically directed on the schedule itself.
Yes, and I accept that with the question of how should the input be included in the planning framework insofar as they're of the view it should be.
Well, that's right, and that's, of course, that's if required or if appropriate. And, of course, one of the reasons that I flagged very early on before the hearing commenced, if you don't know what problem you're working on, then what's that schedule going to look like anyway? And that seems to me to be something which is that the problem of the schedule is the problem, and again, I don't know because it's not really addressed in the evidence of Mr. Plasmaker, but whether or not the Aqualink methodology is part of that schedule. I don't know because now the words efficiency are now taken out. So that's your input problem. So planners have both an input there. Planners are there at the inputs prior to the schedule, because the schedule is just the method implementing the plan, as well as picking out the outputs of the conferencing and then implementing those in some way as required.
Yes.
And so that was the process that we were trying to wrap around this. So where are we going?
Well, I think the first step is the expert witnesses conferencing. I'll talk to my friends over the morning to adjournment in terms of whether there's a desire for each party to have their planner in the room for the duration of the conferencing, or whether they're content to have two or three planners participate with a feedback loop then following that conference, the output of which will be a signed joint witness statement, which will then be followed by planning conferencing. That's I think that's where we get to on this, and timing again for the planning conferencing as soon as possible, but in all likelihood in that window between the first tranche of hearing time and the second tranche.
All right. So a 2-week conference, not next, is it next week? No, yeah, two-day conference, Wednesday, Friday, next week for the primary sector conference, with clear directions around which planners are to be in attendance and when, in terms of understanding the presentation of the conference outputs, and with a further planning conference specifically on the schedules and the reconciliation, what will probably be a reconciliation exercise after the three individual tranches of expert conferencing, and how that is then picked up in the plan, if in fact it should be picked up in the plan. And that to happen in the weeks that the court's not sitting, including Easter.
Yep. Yes.
And to allow time for that, I would have thought at least 2 days, and the suggestion is that also be facilitated. More problematic is the question of your inputs into that process, because I don't know where people stand in terms of the latest revision of evidence. Have you got any thoughts on that?
I do have some thoughts, but it would be premature for me to express those thoughts until I've actually received some feedback from parties in terms of where we're at. It's a moving feast in that regard. I'm optimistic we may have moved forward, but I don't know yet.
So, Mr. Cooper, you've just come back in the room, and there's been some confusion around conferencing. What's going to be clear is that Hydro and territorial authorities will be given a full day to conference. There is no imperative that their conferencing take place this week. Court's view has always been that it follow the evidence, but it seems that there has been, at least from the court's perspective, a desire to conference earlier than the hearing of the evidence. So we were scheduling that into the weeks that we were not sitting, with the hope that, or expectation that, by the time we got to got there, that we would have heard the evidence, understood the differences, and that with those differences in mind, the parties could conference. There's been quite a bit of confusion arising, because parties have then requested primary sector go early, and then there's been some leapfrogging with territorial authorities and Hydro, and then how might that be accommodated? Though quite why they needed to leapfrog anything, I don't know. But plainly, Mr. Wilson, counsel to get directions from its client, morning tea, whether or not Mr. Wilson can be excused from his meeting. But if he can't, the conferencing will not, for Hydro, will not take place on Thursday, because they need a full day. My expectation around this process is when people are telling you their witnesses are not available, that you will tell me why their witnesses are not available, because lawyers know that the court would never just go, oh, well, that's a pity, then we'll just, you know. There has to be a very good reason why they're not available. So lawyers know to be now communicating that in writing and getting that to me. So there's likely to be some movement, but we'll see, on the territorial authorities and possibly, but certainly Hydro. All right. coming back to hydro, you've got a client, Pioneer, which has made a submission. Yes, you're observing. I think you're representing Pioneer or not?
I'm not.
Okay.
Pioneer, of course, operates hydro on conform standards.
Hydro.
Possibly where you.
Yeah, no, that's possibly where it's. That's.
Yeah.
Because I am concerned that there are other hydro generators, quite apart from Trustpower, which have made submissions, and their interests have to be taken into account. But only Trustpower, I think, is calling technical evidence. So I guess only Trustpower can go into the conference. And I thought Falls and Pine Falls Dam and was generating hydro, but they're likely to be, I suspect, individual or privately owned hydro schemes as well. Would that be right? Do you know anything about that?
I don't, to be honest. I know Pioneer Generation have consents that operate or exist beyond the term of Plan Change 7.
Yeah.
So their interests are only affected insofar as Falls Dam's deemed permits are subject to Plan Change 7. So that perhaps explains why they haven't actively participated in this process. But beyond that, I don't have much familiarity with.
And you're not acting for Pioneer in any way. Sorry, I think you just got picked up. We were making inquiries as to who the other hydro operators were.
Yes.
We knew at least one. We thought there's possibly more. And so the relevance of that question is, well, why do we have a technical conference that addresses itself to Trustpower's own interests, where those interests may not coincide with Pioneer or may not coincide with other hydro generators? But that's nothing you can assist us on, Mr. Moore.
There's not much further we can add to that, given the lack of representation both by counsel and by having any technical witness available with respect to those interests. If we think about expert witness conferencing, there's no witness to put in the room for that interest. My recollection is there's no planning evidence called by Pioneer in relation to the way in which hydroelectricity is is considered through the planning framework. So
Just the submission only, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, insofar as there are other hydro generators that have made a submission, obviously whatever the product is of that technical conference, which then gets communicated to the planners, your planner at least is going to have to consider his position in relation to the other submitters. In terms of responding to the output from that technical conference.
Yes, and Mr. De Pelsmaker is alive to that issue, and when you look at the reasons given in terms of the response to hydro, he has been careful to ensure that he's not just responding to the trust power interests, and there were passages in his evidence talking about some of the other hydro schemes where there were mixed schemes, my words, not his, in terms of water being taken both for hydroelectricity but also put into races, which is subsequently taken for irrigation. So Mr. De Pelsmaker is alive to the issue and will need to remain cognizant of the effect of any adjustments that might be being pursued by Trustpower insofar as understanding how those adjustments or refinements might work with respect to other schemes.
All right, that's all I need to hear. Thank you. So you're to come back after morning tea, you having had a chance to talk to your friends about the timing and sequencing of hydro and territorial authorities. I don't see there being a problem with territorial authorities, safe to say that a full day is to be left for that conference this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I had thought the logical order was the primary sector followed by the TAs.
Well, so did I, but then it leapfrogged over us, and I really don't know why, because I don't care, to put it bluntly, because I'm not going to see the products. I would not have thought until the planners had seen the outputs, so it's,
We'll work on that.
Right. All right.
Okay, good. Anyway, we're all on the same page, hopefully. That brings us back to your briefs.
Yes, so my two issues I flagged are still to be addressed, so the briefs that have been filed over the weekend and leave for Mr Wilson, so I'll perhaps deal with what was filed over the weekend first.
Yeah.
So three briefs of evidence were filed. The first was a supplementary statement of evidence of Mr de Pelsmaker, dated 14 March. That evidence has two attachments, which are marked up versions of Plan Change 7. Now, in terms of the two attachments, the first of those documents shows tracked in amendments against the 4th of March version, so it can be seen what's been removed out following what had been recommended in the reply evidence from Mr de Pelsmaker. Mm. The second attachment, attachment two, is a tracked change version as against the notified version of Plan Change 2, which is a cleaner looking document in the sense that it doesn't have the additions that have subsequently been removed. It's just showing what's shifted from what was notified. But the view was that parties in the court would be better assisted by seeing those changes from the reply version to understand what's been taken, but also the plan change from what's notified. So that's the first brief that was filed. The second brief was a statement of evidence of Ms Gilroy, dated 13 March. Ms Gilroy is the manager of the consents, or manager of consents at the ORC. Her evidence has attached to it. At the back, some maps that had been discussed last week showing the various applications that have been lodged and where they have been lodged, so that the court can see spatially what is currently being processed. There are also some maps, a map on the very last page showing the consents that are located in Schedule 2A catchment, so capturing the overlap between the deemed permits and the catchments set out in Schedule 2A. Ms Gilroy will be able to step the court through those maps in some more detail when she gives her evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third brief of evidence is a statement of evidence from Ms King, dated 14th of March. Ms King is a team leader of consents and has first-hand experience as a consents processing officer and has been dealing with deemed permits or applications to replace deemed permits that have been lodged, including recently. So has the first-hand experience of implementing Plan Change 7 as notified, and provides her evidence in relation to some of the challenges that have resulted from the application of some of the matters of control and discretion, or not discretion, matters of control, I should say.
All right, and then you're going to provide another brief of evidence from Mr Wilson, correcting an error which was an error that would be material in some aspect. Do you want to be drawn on that?
Yes, I'm quite happy to, and the evidence has been prepared. Mr Wilson gave an answer in relation to a question from my friend Mr Welsh in relation to the trust power permits, and there was a question around whether the 100 or so permits were included in the 322 deemed permits that appear on the record. The council team sought to show those permits on a map, and it became apparent relatively quickly that those deemed permits were not entered into the system on the basis that the council had understood that they wouldn't be pursued. So it's not simply when one looks at the number of deemed permits that it's 322 minus 100, give or take. It's 322 minus the five that have been entered.
All right.
So
this was questioning in relation to a report sent to the minister?
Yes, they were questions in relation to that report that has the 322 recorded, and there was some discussion, and it came up a couple of times last week in terms of whether the 322 was actually closer to 222.
Yeah, in terms of the scale of the problem.
Yes.
And I think it is relevant, and that would have been the inference that I would have taken.
Yes.
Yeah, and so his supplementary brief, unless parties oppose that, his supplementary brief is important, I think, to correct the record. Mr. Welsh?
Absolutely, ma'am. It was one of those instances with one asked the question without knowing the answer, and it was simply seeking a
cross-examination.
No, it's not. But it was actually just trying to seek some clarification if that was the case. I didn't know whether it was the case or not.
Wasn't.
So I think that supplementary evidence will be very useful, because that's all I was after was the answer, whatever that is.
All right, no worries. So that'll come in when, do we think?
Well, we do have copies now, so we can
circulate that. Okay. All right, that's good. We can do that. So I had some questions about the evidence that you filed. Looking at the hearing schedule, and I'm not sure whether it's the latest hearing schedule, but we'd agreed to adjourn late Friday. We'd agreed to adjourn Tuesday morning so everybody could find some time in the schedule to actually look at the briefs of evidence and for quiet reflection and to take advice from their witnesses, as I understood the purpose of the adjournment, and that's the adjournment's also needed by the court. So while we have the documents came in late yesterday, and we've only had hard copies this morning, and so we haven't sat down and studied the evidence, and so need an opportunity to do that as well. So I'm not sure whether that's actually reflected yet in the hearing schedule, but tomorrow morning is actually an adjournment. What is in the hearing schedule? Well, firstly, when were you intending to call those three witnesses? Is that tomorrow?
Yeah, I was anticipating we might call them tomorrow afternoon. Yeah. So once
tomorrow
parties...
Tomorrow afternoon, four witnesses.
Yes.
Okay, so that's...
So the schedule currently only gets two witnesses, so...
I'm not sure whether this is the up-to-date schedule.
The one that I was given this morning.
That's okay. Tomorrow morning is an adjournment, and we'll be calling four witnesses tomorrow afternoon from the Regional Council. Understood? Yep. Okay. The plan change as notified, and that being the plan change that was ratified by the Regional Council, is proposed, as I understand it, to be amended by Mr. De Plaismaker, correct?
Yes.
And so parties that have, or submitters that have made a submission on the original notified plan are able to have that submission on the original notified plan still taken into consideration and decided, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I needed to know. That's really important. So the second thing is that, somewhat unusually, Mr. Plaismaker talks about the council's position. We're actually... You're to communicate that. What we needed to know is what is the view of the planner as a planning witness?
Yes.
And so there's some confusion. There may be some confusion amongst parties. Is this the view of the witness, or is this the view of the council? And you'll understand the significance of that. How would you like to respond to that?
The brief does express the view of the witness. The language perhaps... hasn't clearly articulated that, and Mr. De Plaismaker will be able to confirm that when he's called tomorrow, I would have thought. So insofar as the way that that evidence has been framed, Mr. De Plaismaker was a participant in discussions but ultimately recognises it's his evidence, and the council recognises it is his evidence and his opinion that he is giving. Understand why the question's being asked, but again, it's Mr. De Plaismaker's evidence and his view being expressed.
Okay, good. So you'll need to lead that from your witness, because if you don't, I think other parties will in cross examination.
Yes.
Okay, so the status of the notified plan, there's no walking that back. it's notified and parties are entitled to make submissions on it and have that considered by the court.
Yes.
Okay. And so then the other matter that arises is for the changes which are now proposed, those would need to be changes which have been sought by a party to this hearing or there within scope of that?
There needs to be scope for those changes, and my understanding was that where changes had been made, there was a reference to where the planner considered scope to exist. But, yes, there does need to be scope for the changes.
Right. And so there just needs to be consideration that whether that has been carefully done so that the court in every instance can pick up a submission and go, well, yes, I can see where that arises. Okay. And there's probably going to have to be some legal submission around it as well.
Yes. And in that regard, I think it's important that parties understand this is the evidence of a planner. It's not determinative of an outcome here, and parties are still welcome to pursue the changes that they are seeking to Plan Change 7 from what was notified.
Okay. Well, that's important, and I'm glad that you've made that statement. Then the only other thing, which I think still needs to be addressed by yourself and perhaps by the other lawyers present, is the status of those MPS objectives, which are to be included without any further first schedule process.
Yes.
The MPS 2020 objectives, there's three of them, and the planning witness says, well, that's a matter for another plan. Is that correct in law? I don't know. I just need to know what your thinking is around that, and would be drawing on you also, Ms. Dixon. Well, actually, and all of the lawyers present to understand what is for those three provisions where the MPS says, and I can give you the references. One's fish passage, one's wetlands, and one is something to do with rivers. Are there objectives? There are objectives which the MPS say are to be included in a regional plan without any further first schedule process. He says not, and so I'm looking to you as counsel to guide us on the law to do with that.
Yes, he says not, as I understand it, because the requirements to insert them into an operative plan, whereas Plan Change 7 is a proposed plan at this point in time, but there's still a live question of what is the effect of the inclusion of those in the operative plan. And then what might happen once Plan Change 7, assuming it makes its way through this process in some shape or form, what happens in terms of the inclusion of those objectives into that operative Plan Change 7.
Very much a matter for legal submissions, because
yes,
none of that, we can't expect to get a flavour of that at all, actually, from the evidence, and because it is a matter of legal submission.
Yes, and we're very alive to that and the challenges with that, and my friends are too, so I anticipate you'll hear something further about that during the course of today.
Okay.
But in terms of, I'm just cognizant that waiting till I'll call it the council's reply at the end of the hearing, insofar as there will be any form of reply, the court will be assisted by submissions from the council in terms of what it's doing in that regard sooner than the end of the hearing, then I'm happy to address that point directly much earlier.
Tomorrow, I think, we'll do. Yep.
Okay.
Actually, much earlier. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. And I'm also looking for guidance from all counsel in the room also about the status of those three provisions. And if you want the references, I can look them up now, or you might already know the references off the top of your head. Ms. Penn, Ms. Williams, you're looking like you know the references off the top of your head.
Yes, Your Honour, it's 322.1, which is the natural inland wetlands, 324.1, which is the rivers, and 326.1, which is the fish passage.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. Yeah. Okay. So how did they get brought down into a plan change, or can they get brought down into a plan change? Or an operative plan, do they influence any outcome under this plan change or not? I mean, obviously those issues are very much alive for your client in particular. So I do expect council to assist and the regional council to address tomorrow. But any thoughts over the weekend as to how this actually impacts your evidence? So you've got a breathing space tomorrow.
just making sure I understand. You're not meaning in relation to 322, 324, but
generally
the time frame for how we're going to manage things today.
Generally speaking.
I had come to the conclusion last night, looking at the changes that Mr. De Pelsmaker was suggesting, that it would probably not be particularly helpful to the court to hear from either the Minister's planner or from the Department of Conservation, the Director General's planner, because they need to get their heads around exactly those points that you've been raising. And also to work out perhaps how much of their own evidence is still relevant or whether it's been superseded and so on. So my thinking was that probably wouldn't be particularly helpful to the court to hear from them today. In fact, they may as well go straight to the adjourned period tomorrow morning when the planners are to put their heads together. Without any reference to anybody, I was actually thinking that it might be helpful to the court to actually hear from the new witnesses this afternoon.
I was wondering
if they were available.
If they were available, whether we move straight to them. Because I was wondering how would your policy person, how does their evidence sort of sit, quite apart from anything that Mr. Enzor might say, and does this, you know, they too would need or may need an opportunity to consider this.
We did have a meeting last night over a hot laptop, as it were, in order to try and work out exactly that question. Ms. Kahiri's evidence is reasonably high level and actually deals with the sort of bigger issues of how this was approached within the ministry and what the minister's views were and so on. She has taken the position in her evidence anyway that effectively, in terms of the actual drafting, she is guided by Mr. Enzor, who's the planner that's been called. My feeling is that her evidence could be given this morning, and she's here. If there were questions that subsequently arose, it might be more sensible to hear her this morning and then perhaps for her to be recalled if that were necessary, rather than to hold her over.
Or start your case tomorrow if we get to the Regional Council's case today.
We do have an issue of availability for Ms. Kahiri tomorrow. We're very much hoping that she could be heard today, even if she does have to return at some point.
Okay, all right. Thank you,
Ms.
Williams.
I also have some availability constraints for the Director General's witnesses, Your Honour. So Dr. Dunn is available today and tomorrow morning only. Now, tomorrow morning we've now set aside to do the planning thinking, which is, I don't disagree with that, but it does mean that we need to get Dr. Dunn on today. Mr. Brass also has a constraint because he has the other court matter in Marlborough for at least Wednesday, Thursday, when he's involved in the mediation on the Marlborough plan. I'm truly not sure quite what it is because I haven't had any involvement, but he has that constraint. So he's available today, tomorrow, Friday potentially, but not Wednesday, Thursday.
All right.
Coming back to his evidence in chief as already provided to the court, Your Honour, again, a great deal of the evidence is commenting on the notified plan change and so it's not entirely irrelevant, but it's less relevant than it was.
Well, true, except that he might like some of the bits back.
Yes.
Yeah. So that, yeah. Okay. Mr. Page.
We have no particular constraints to be concerned about. I'm happy to accommodate my friends in calling the evidence from MFE and DOC today. I had not anticipated asking questions of Regional Council's new witnesses this afternoon, but if that's what suits best, then we'll do it.
Now, one thing that occurs to me from last week, you indicated that your client signalled a position change. I want to see it. Obviously that was prior to knowing that this was coming along as well.
Yes.
But we need to see it. So we need to understand, again, where your case is tracking, either in relation to persisting with the relief, as in Ms. Darcy's evidence, which is, you know, as per the submission, or whether it's now
going in a different direction, which was what was signalled in court. We need to see it to understand the salience and direction of the questions.
Well, I understand the court's need about that. there is, of course, a difference between how expert witness is thinking in response to what they are hearing from sitting in the court compared with obtaining instructions to amend ORUC's case. I can tell you that we have arranged a meeting tomorrow morning to discuss ORUC's position. So I can't communicate an instruction before then.
So what is your intention going forward, both in relation to A, your client's instructions, because you signalled a change last week,
yes,
and B, Ms. and I don't, yeah, it could well be that your client has a different view, but whether Ms. Dicey is on the same page is quite a different thing, which is, I think, what you're signalling.
Well, because ORUG is a very large group of water permit holders, to be fair, having to consult with them and advise them about what has transpired and to take instructions is not something that happens in 5 minutes. So it's simply the case that they won't have had the time to receive advice either from Ms. Dicey or from Ms. Irving and myself about what has transpired and what they should now be thinking about doing. And that's the purpose of tomorrow morning.
Okay. And so when will you be in a position to communicate that to the court?
Well, I expect to be able to communicate that orally tomorrow afternoon, unless my client asks me for more time while they consider what their instructions are likely to be. But in terms of filing a formal position document for the court to see and to have on its record, that's not likely to happen before sort of mid to end of the week, I wouldn't have thought, but I'd hope for the court to have it this week anyway.
Well, you signalled quite a change in substance last week.
Yes.
I think it is only fair to the court, it's court's expectations that be now considered and documented, if in fact that is a change of position. And it's only fair to the other parties, because otherwise the salience of questions being asked in cross-examination will not be understood. And the fairness of statements elicited at cross-examination, which are incomplete in some sense in terms of where your client might be going, could well be questioned. So we need to know, has there been a change in position from your client? And we need to know, I would have thought, Wednesday, which is, just sounds like a random date, but how are we to understand where you're going with the questions for any of the planning witnesses coming up is what my concern is.
Yes. I'm alive to what your concerns are, but I am constrained by the speed at which I can give advice and obtain instructions. And that is, of course, complicated by what we've received over the weekend.
Well, yeah, that's the added factor. Yeah.
Yes, which my clients largely haven't seen, so they need to be told about what that contains and be given the opportunity to give me instructions about that.
All right, Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock, I'd expect to, if there has been a formal change in position, I expect that to be documented and communicated to the court and the other parties what that change is, because that was signalled last week, quite apart from any further changes which have been signalled now by the regional council. My understanding is that you'll take instructions on both those tomorrow, large group, as you say, and I understand that as well, large group, whose interests are not necessarily aligned. But 9 o'clock Wednesday morning to communicate the position, whether you are continuing with the original relief, which I think is subject to jurisdiction and scope, I think, is open to you, like everybody else, to continue with.
Yes. we'll have something filed by 9 a.m. on Wednesday.
Right. And then I want... that will be together with, if there is a change in position, what is that change and how that's going to be communicated and by whom and the evidence as well and the timing of that. Thank you.
Chair, please.
All right. So where do we get to in terms of trying to make the best use of today?
I think we start with Ms. Dixon for the minister and hearing from her policy witness today. She's available, and I would have thought we could proceed through with that evidence. In terms of Mr. Ensor, there may be questions for Mr. Ensor in relation to some aspects of his evidence, in much the same way as we had questions of Ms. McIntyre. Well, there were questions of Ms.
There's
McIntyre.
There's points of clarification that's useful to get them out sometimes now.
If it assists, I can signal I have some questions which perhaps fit into that category. So we could use some of that time for that purpose. But we probably don't need to if we can use the time usefully elsewhere. So that's, in terms of if we can get to the Regional Council witnesses today, if that's a better use of time so that Mr. Ensor only has to then appear once to answer the full range of questions, that might be more efficient.
Okay, so what are you suggesting? That we start with Ms. Dixon's opening?
Yes.
Move to at least the policy witness?
Yes.
And then
question mark over Mr. Ensor, and perhaps we can have a discussion about that in the break as to whether that's a constructive use of our time today. We would then move to the opening from Ms. Williams, and here we would hear from Dr. Dunn in terms of ecology. I don't know how many questions there will be for Dr. Dunn. Things may have advanced following last week's questioning of Dr. Allibone, and we may be able to proceed quite swiftly, is my view with Dr. Dunn, so we may be able to proceed through that. Mr. Brass, like Mr. Ensor, there may be some questions, but not the full range. If we, and I'd need to check availability, but if we hold Mr. Ensor and we hold Mr. Brass, we may then be able to proceed straight on to the council witnesses in terms of the supplementary evidence which was produced over the weekend, and have that produced to assist with parties' understanding of that material, particularly Mr. De Pelsmaker's amendments to the recommended amendments to the plan.
All right. And it seems to me that you're in a very similar position to Mr. Page in terms of having a clear view as to the ambit of your case. And this, in your case, it's actually the operation of the three objectives in the NPS.
Yes.
It's just pointless going through this exercise unless we know where you stand and then can understand what the salience of the questions are.
Yes.
So very much like Mr. Page. So how will that then... So I think, are you saying that you don't need to know that ahead of in the policy planner, maybe, for the minister or for the witnesses from Ms. Williams?
Yes, with respect to the policy planner, the my questions don't relate to the relevance of those three objectives. In relation to the... neither in relation to Dr. Dunn. So the council's position on the inclusion of those matters is going to be more of an issue from a plan drafting perspective rather than a technical evidence perspective.
All right. Well, Ms. Williams and Ms. Dixon, you're happy proceeding on that basis that we don't need to hear from the council first about the operation, whether are those three objectives from the NPS attached to this plan change. We don't need to know their position prior to moving to your policy witness and prior to moving to Ms. Williams' witness? Or do you? I think it needs some quiet reflection. It's the same case as Mr. Page. What is the case for the council when putting its questions?
I had touched on it in my legal submissions, Your Honour.
Yeah.
I will just put to the RMA and the relevant section. I'm happy to proceed and hear
think it might be, I think we could proceed on that basis.
Okay.
I'm not sure what Ms. Williams might think. You might have a different view.
I have touched on certainly the fish passage matter in my legal subs that I've drafted, and I think we can proceed on that basis, Your Honour.
All right, very good. Mr. Winchester, you've caught yourself up with all of the discussion. Any thoughts?
Very efficient, Your Honour. It's been neatly encapsulated. I'm certainly quite happy for the Minister and the Director General's witnesses to go ahead. I think it's a valuable use of time.
Okay.
Their evidence somewhat tests it independently. It's related to the case, but not necessarily the relief.
Mm.
So I think that's a good use of time. Ms. McIntyre will be available to come back this week if required, just subject to timing. And I think she'll be poring over the Regional Council's evidence. I think it may assist to get the evidence on the record, obviously, and possibly to have Mr. Pelsmaker in particular available to give that evidence, possibly today, because everything else sort of flows from that in a way.
All right. Okay, thank you. Mr. Page? Happy? All right, Ms. Irving?
That's fine.
Mr. Walsh? All right, any issues? Are you quite content moving that way?
Ma'am, I'm...
Very content.
Well, I'm trying to learn by osmosis in terms of... I'm a little bit constrained. I spent a large part of the weekend trying to catch up on the transcript, but I'm very conscious there were parts not included in the transcript that, in terms of the in-chambers discussion.
Mm.
And I have tried to speak to my friends and who are all busy trying to deal with themselves, their cases, and all have slightly different views as to what transpired and where we're heading. So... I'm not sure not being here means I'm the less confused or more confused, ma'am.
Okay. So what are you confused about? Has the directions around conferencing assisted today?
Oh, absolutely, ma'am.
Right, good.
The one matter I'm still a little bit confused with, and I've tried, it's very difficult for a day transcriptor to pick up an exact point, but there's some reference about the planners coming back this week, perhaps for a hot tubbing. I just need to know that because I have a witness.
No. Somebody might have suggested that last week, that they all come together in a hot tub, and I wasn't that, didn't know that that would necessarily be good because each party has to consider their positions because not every party's position, you know, even those that are generally aligned, say, with the minister's position, which seems to be now more closely, regional councils more closely aligned with the minister. Their interests are different, and so I couldn't see the value in putting planners in a hot tub.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. It was just that was one suggestion. The other matter I'm just still perplexed on is, having received this evidence, is it the court's expectation that the other parties will file further evidence, or is the court willing to have that witness, the planner, be led slightly to comment on the new evidence or the new plan change as recommended by Mr. De Pelsmaker?
I'm in your hands. There is a direction that if you wish to file supplementary evidence, you just need to tell us.
Yes, ma'am.
And you can do that, or you can lead the evidence. But I think where parties are changing their position, it should be in writing so that there can be no issue that the court has or has not picked up from leading questions or cross-examination what the case was. So if you've changed your position in response to anything,
I haven't.
You haven't?
No.
Okay, so probably nothing needs to be filed, but if you did, it both in response to this evidence or generally changed the position, it would need to be in writing so the court, there is no misapprehension about what the four corners of the case.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, that's very useful. Thank you, and I'm sorry to take up the court time for my points of clarification, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other points of clarification which are needed? None. Very good. So, Ms. Dixon.
The copy of my submissions in front of you. Now, these were written over the weekend and printed yesterday about lunchtime, so I'm going to probably not read some parts of them, and mm-hmm. I will interpolate to some extent as well in an attempt to respond to the material that was filed by ORC yesterday. It doesn't change the minister's position, but it might be helpful to the court if I note some things on the way through. So, starting then, Mum, at paragraph 2, the minister supports the intent of PC7. There are issues of drafting and substantive content with PC7 which need addressing, and that I think remains the case. I'll discuss these and proposed amendments to PC7 and these submissions. What I probably won't do is to discuss proposed amendments in any great detail in these submissions, because that position has changed, but I will talk about it to some extent. The next section deals with background, and I've started with the deemed water permits in Otago, and I suggest that I probably don't need to read paragraphs 3 and 4. They're on the record in my submissions, but I can probably take you instead to paragraph 5. So at paragraph 5, I've made the point that the expiring deemed permits must be replaced by resource consents with applications lodged by the 1st of April 2021 or 1 July 2021 at the discretion of Council. That is that, of course, if the water takes are to continue, that they must be replaced. And as we've heard in the course of this hearing, a number by various parties are in fact being surrendered. Exactly how many deemed permits remain to be replaced has been the subject of some debate in this hearing. But it seems likely that allowing for some hydro consents to be surrendered, there will be approximately 230 authorising the take and use of water. That number is obviously not correct, as we've heard this morning through the clarification about how the consents to be surrendered by Trustpower, in fact, have been included in the calculations. And I would actually refer, Your Honour, to Ms Gilroy's evidence. The new evidence filed last night at paragraphs 23 and 24 sets out very clearly the position for deemed permits, expiring permits, how many the Council is processing and how they're dealing with them. And it's probably just fair to say it is a very large number, probably more than, in fact, we were anticipating. So going to the last sentence of that paragraph, this represents a significant proportion of primary allocation of fresh water in Otago. I think that position remains. Then at paragraph 6, I've talked about the background difficulty, which is that the regional planning framework against which these applications to replace water consents could be assessed is its common ground in this hearing, that the operative regional plan is simply not adequate. It predates even the first National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management in 2011, and it's effectively enabled the granting of 35-year consents, which have locked in allocation in a way that would frustrate any attempt to address over-allocation and environmental degradation in future. Over 80 catchments have no flow or allocation limits other than a region-wide default minimum flow of 50% of MALF. Then the next couple of paragraphs simply set out the, from the Minister's perspective, what happened. In 2018, the ORC intended to notify a significant plan change to set minimum flow rates for the Arrow, the Cadrona and the Manuhitakere catchments. OIC paused that proposed plan change, intending instead to focus on the land and water plan, the major coming plan. In August and December 2018, the Minister wrote to Otago Regional Council expressing concern about the decision not to proceed with the plan change, and then on the 22nd of March in 2019, the Minister met with ORC to discuss his concerns. And that triggered the Skelton investigation, which I look at next. Probably not necessary, unless you want me to take you through the conclusions, the focus of Professor Skelton's investigation. Perhaps just to go to paragraph 11.
I was going to just say, do you agree with Mr. Moore in terms of the relevance that the recommendations and the reasons for the recommendations made by Professor Skelton are relevant matters for this court to consider?
In short, yes, I do, ma'am, and actually I'm coming to that. I've got a specific section in my submissions which I do want to address you on.
Sure.
So Professor Skelton, anyway, concluded that that there wasn't an RMA-compliant planning and consenting framework in place, and he made a number of recommendations, as we know. That pursuant to Section 24A of the RMA, the Minister recommends to the Otago Regional Council that it takes all necessary steps to develop a fit-for-purpose freshwater management planning regime that gives effect to the national instruments and sets coherent framework, and so on. And that pursuant to Section 24A, in order to achieve recommendation 2, the Minister recommends to Otago Regional Council that it adopt the plan of work, which is set out in the two bullet points at the top of page 5. But turning to paragraph 12, Professor Skelton also recommended that the Minister initiate the necessary legislative process to change the date for expiry of the deemed permits of section 4133 of the RMA from the 1st of October 2021 to the 31st of December 2025. And I want to turn to address that. So in terms of the Minister's recommendations, the Minister was not in favour of changing the RMA to extend the date for the expiry of the deemed permits, which would have allowed applications to continue to be made under the old planning framework. The Minister considered that a 30-year transition period had already been provided under legislation to manage this issue, and therefore he preferred that the Council develop a plan change by the 31st of March 2020 rather than Parliament intervening. The plan change would provide an interim planning and consenting framework to manage freshwater up until new discharge and allocation limits could be set in line with what is now the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2020. The Minister wrote to Council recommending both a new land and water plan and an interim planning and consenting framework that would apply until the full land and water plan was developed. On the 16th of December 2019, the Chair of Otago Regional Council wrote to Minister Parker accepting recommendation 3, that it prepare a plan change to be an adequate interim planning and consenting framework to manage freshwater up until Otago Regional Council's water plan becomes operative. And the letter states that the focus of this plan change is to be the processing of applications for water permits, including those to replace deemed permits. And I think it's worth just pausing there for a moment, Your Honour, to look at that letter in light of Mr. De Pelsmaker's new evidence yesterday. Mr. De Pelsmaker, at paragraphs 5 and 6 of his evidence, talks about an extraordinary meeting that was held by Council, I think on the 27th of November 2019. So that was the meeting that considered the Minister's recommendations. And in his evidence, he talks about exactly what was resolved at that meeting. And actually, the minutes are on the website, as is the agenda on the Council's website, and I looked at them last night in light of this. And the reason why the extraordinary meeting is important is, of course, this is Council itself saying this is how we want to conduct this plan change and accepting the Minister's recommendation. And following that meeting, Council wrote the letter that I've just referred to, and the letter is attached to Mr. De Pelsmaker's original evidence in chief at Appendix E, and it's also in the common bundle in Volume 5, tab 12E, page 1550 if you want to refer to it. But the letter is in the same terms as the, as you would expect, as the council position as recorded at that meeting. And essentially what the letter says is that at the extraordinary meeting, council agreed to prepare and notify by the 31st of March 2020 a plan change to be called the Water Permits Plan Change that will provide an adequate interim planning and consenting framework to manage fresh water up until the Otago Regional Council's water plan becomes operative. The focus of this plan change is to be the processing of applications for water permits, including those to replace deemed permits. And then the letter to the Minister goes on to set out five key principles. Which I'd invite the court to have a look at in more detail, but in essence, one of those matters is efficiency of time and cost for both council applicants and other parties. And I will a bit later in my submissions actually come back to one of the other matters that were one of those key principles. So the submission I'm making, Your Honour, is that it was an understood position as between council and the minister, but also it was Council's stated position that this was to be an adequate interim planning and consenting framework and very much a transitional framework. And on that basis, picking up from paragraph 16, ORC developed Plan Change 7, plan change we have, and also, of course, the omnibus plan change, proposed plan just 8 and 1, which incorporates both discharge management and waste matters. Then in February 2020, the then chair of ORC asked the minister to use his powers under section 142 of the RMA to call in the plan changes as nationally significant proposals, as they'd aroused widespread public concern regarding effects on the environment and because they involve significant use of natural resources. On the 8th of April 2020, the minister issued his direction to refer the plan change to the Environment Court for decision as proposals of national significance. So both plan changes have come to the court. Then on the 6th of July, just completing that timeline, the Environmental Protection Agency publicly notified the minister's direction and the plan change PC7. I then turn to actually look at what is in Plan Change 7, and that is what I'm going to suggest I don't take you through. The position is moving all the time. Other than to make the point that in essentials, we are still dealing with the same thing. It's intended to be a plan change to address the deemed permit situation and those that will expire by 2025, and the same framework of policies that are directed exactly at those matters are still there. The rules that bounce off those policies are still there. So the detail is changing, but not as it was set out, basically, as the plan change was notified. Instead, I want to pick up at page 9, because I think it is important to talk about the limitations on this plan change in light of the letter and the record of the extraordinary meeting that I've just been talking about. So starting from paragraph 23, the Skelton report and Mr. De Pelsmaker in his evidence expand on the significant resource management issues that Otago is grappling with. The lack of understanding about the state of the region's freshwater resources and the effect of water takes on those resources, the inadequacy of the current planning framework in terms of giving effect to the objectives and policies of NPSFM 2020, uncertainty around the environmental outcomes, the limits and the environmental flows that need to be established in accordance with NPSFM 2020, allocation that may not prioritise first the health and well-being of water bodies and freshwater ecosystems, and lastly, the pending expiry of a large number of water permits and the growing demand for water. As I discussed with Mr. De Pilsmaker last week, these are not resource management issues, with the exception of the expiry of the water permits, that PC7 itself addresses. Rather, PC7 is intended to put in place a temporary interim regime that will, use the expression we've all been using, hold the line, ensure that long-term consents are not granted that will lock in over-allocation and provide a transition to a land and water regional plan that itself addresses and resolves these issues. In my submission, this plan change will fail if its transitional nature and these acknowledged limitations are not kept in mind. That is, Council will simply be unable to deal with processing the volume of consents, and permit holders will be able to continue under Section 124 of the Act under the deemed permit or existing permit parameters. And I take on board the evidence that has been filed. I'm not sure whether it's Ms King or Ms Gilroy, who talks about the resourcing up that Council has done, and I appreciate that that is sizeable, and the sheer numbers of consents that they're dealing with is acknowledged, and how to actually deal with them in the time is a recognised problem. But it doesn't change my submission that fundamentally, if this plan change gets too complicated, what's likely to happen is that a lot of these consents continue under Section 124, and therefore what the plan change is intending to put into place won't happen.
I don't take it the specific risk there, if I can put it that way, is that if they just continue under Section 124, the deemed permits in particular, then there is an opportunity to ramp up the taking pending the processing of the applications for resource consent. So that's the risk that that's the risk that's encapsulated by just continuing under 124 is an increase in the rate of take and volume of take in anticipation of the plan change becoming operative, if that's the direction that...
Yes. Using the...
Oh, no, in fact, it becomes operative, they'll just continue to use it up until the resource consents are processed.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a specific risk that you won't... that environmental risks may increase pending the processing of the resource consent application, because the system itself has now become bogged down with the sheer volume of applications made.
And because the deemed permits in particular, the allocation of water under them is extremely generous. Of course, it was, you know, they operate from a different time. By today's standards, they are large amounts of water. And that water can carry on being taken, so the environmental degradation will continue and so on.
Yes, that's, I think that's what I'm asking you, that in terms of the actual risk, if you bog, from the Minister's perspective, if you bog the resource, if you bog this plan change down by looking for outcomes, including positive environmental outcomes, that'll increase the time taken to consider and process the resource consent applications, during which period there may be an increase in the use of the water and therefore an increase in the effect on the environment. That's the risk that you're actually addressing with the 124 submission. Is that right?
Yes, you're right. I think it also defeats the whole point of the fact that Parliament said these deemed permits were to expire on the 1st of October 2021. And what this will mean is that they don't expire on the, in practical terms, they don't expire on the 1st of October. So whatever issues there are associated with the deemed permits, and I think everybody accepts there are many, they simply continue.
All right. I think I understand.
So picking up at paragraph 26, it's required to be an adequate interim planning and consenting framework, and that's my emphasis, to manage fresh water up until the time that new discharge and allocation limits are set. Adequate basically implies that it should do the job, be fit for its interim purpose. It can be better than the status quo, and that's the advantage of this plan change as opposed to simply extending the life of the deemed and expiring permits. An extension would have allowed a continued period of applying for consents under the deficient current planning framework and the likely granting of more consents of long duration, which, of course, this plan change has the ability to stop. Further, one of the acknowledged deficiencies of the operative water plan would have been continued, that is, when renewing existing permits to take into use water, a consent is granted with a volume no greater than has been taken under an existing consent at least the preceding 5 years, which has allowed users to maximise their take in that period and artificially lock in it in for consent renewal. But there is a balance to be struck between a plan change that rolls over the old rules and one that attempts to anticipate the full land and water plan to come. And I put it to Mr. De Pelsmaker that his description of wanting to consider activities as soon as possible and bring them in line with the new land and water plan was risky. Anticipating the new land and water plan is not the role of this plan change. And the risk is that the applications, as we've been discussing, cannot be dealt with expeditiously because they're effectively being assessed against the framework to come. And I'll come back to that shortly. That said, for the plan change to be adequate, it must give effect to some extent to the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2020, which I will turn to in a moment. Finally, the essential approach of PC7 is precautionary and is supported by the Minister. That is, it is intended to curtail the potential for further increases in water use and further investment in land uses that rely on the consumptive use of water until a fit-for-purpose freshwater management framework has been set under the new land and water plan.
We'll take the morning adjournment there. Also a matter for discussion, I think, over the morning adjournment is where have parties got to in terms of the scenarios to be proposed for the primary sector conferencing. They were due to the court on Friday. I haven't seen anything, and I would have expect now those scenarios to have been agreed. If they're not with the court, you're not getting conferencing, all right? So it's all part of your pre-conference work.
A list has been circulated.
Yeah. And that is agreement on data set together with scenarios which I think we talked about testing irrigation type or infrastructure type, because there's a range of scenarios there, together with I guess scenarios as to land use and water metering seem to be the three things in play in Mr. McIndoe's evidence. Now, that should have been filed with the court, so I want an update on that. Thank you. Otherwise, we'll take an adjournment and we'll get back to your submissions. All right, thank you.
All rise.